We head out to the fan hotline to welcome on college basketball on Fox's. The man's got 75 jobs. He's also Cleveland's own John Fanta, who joins us every single Tuesday at 4 p.m. Hi, John. How you doing?
Good afternoon, fellas. I'm doing great. Good to be with you. Here we go.
Would you care to relitigate Kevin Stefanski versus Stephen Vogt and see who's winning that debate today?
I would love to. Let's get ready to rumble.
Today's not the day.
I feel like today could be the day.
This is not a victory lap for Stefanski day. It was a third preseason game. You called me nasty things on a text message thread because I was getting excited about a third preseason game.
He had a point.
Then the quarterback, like Gabriel, looks good, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Stefanski's the greatest coach of all time. Stefanski, give him his flowers because people like Adam Schein say nice things about him. Come on, Fanta, get real.
You know what's funny? I was not going to go down this road and start to criticize who I will now be calling all throughout the season, three-win Wilson.
Whoa.
Three-win Wilson, who tried to take this conversation and turn it into a fight between Peterlin and I.
That's a good point, John.
are not letting it happen today, three-win Wilson.
He literally just yelled at you.
It's like three-finger Mordecai Brown. It's three-win Wilson.
And I just did it with a finger point in my car as I talked to you, three-win Wilson.
Which finger?
You can take a good guess, okay? And it wasn't my pinky or my thumb. No, the fact is, it's not. What is funny about the coaching debate is, it's for a different day, but here's Kenny Atkinson just standing to the side while we battle with these two coaches. I don't know. That's for a different day. We got bigger fish to fry.
We do have a little bit of NBA news to pass along, by the way. We haven't gotten to it yet. Max Strus is going to miss 3 to 4 weeks with, I guess we're just supposed to know all of these terms now. I love when Shams Charania goes way inside the Cleveland Clinic by going in. It was a Jones fracture as opposed to a Simmons fracture or a Williams fracture. So we'll have more on that as the show goes on.
Three to four months,
going to be a while.
That's tough.
is it bad that I just don't care about this injury? I love Max. He'll be healthy. He'll be ready by December.
So will Darius.
We wish Max Strus the best, obviously, in his recovery. We care about his health, of course. But, yeah, I mean, the Cavs offseason was kind of a blah. It's they're going to run it back with the core that they've got, and I don't fault them for that, and we'll see. Again, that's probably for a different day. We've got a roster, fellas.
That's true.
We got fish to fry, John. What fish do you want to fry?
Well, I mean, I like a Great Lake Erie perch. I really do. So let's fry some perch.
Easy with the pandering there, Ken Carmen.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, you're not a fan of that East Coast? Oh, none of this ocean-led catch. Oh, give me some Lake Erie fish. Okay.
You know, you're trying to loop me in for a second straight week to go at the morning show, and I've already got Carmen claims on X that he and Zach Jackson have had bets on Browns over-under win total. And I don't think Carmen's always paid up his bets, and that's why I've got the Fox 8 I-team on the case.
I finally got him to turn on him. This is good.
You know, Fantas, I mean, it's wild concept, betting on over-unders of the local football team. I mean, wild.
Yeah, you would never.
Look, I would never.
Who else but the original Ken Carmen could think of such a great idea to bet over-unders of the local football team?
Yeah, right. Well, I tried last week to bet on the over-under of the football team.
No, you didn't. You said they were going to win six wins, which is the limpest projection ever when the win totals are 6.5.
Well, wait. Here's a good bet for this team. Will they use more quarterbacks than games they win?
Ooh, will they have more preseason wins than they do regular season wins?
I don't think that. I don't think that. I mean, when I look at the roster, when I look at this roster, I'm just curious to what is up with the backfield? To me, it's obviously they're bringing in another running back, but when you see that and the Judkins thing, that is an elephant in the room for so many reasons, but that's concerning because when Kevin Stefanski's Browns have been most successful, they've had a pretty dang good running attack. And if you look at the roster, the first thing you would say, even somebody that wasn't as familiar with this football team would say, what in the Lord's name is happening at running back for this team? But guys, like, I just think, I think what's interesting about the last 24 hours to me is that they finally admitted what I think a lot of us were thinking. What was the point with Kenny Pickett? What was the whole, maybe they clearly had some sort of a thought process with him playing a role for this football team. But when he got hurt, I was thinking to myself, what is the point? Because the goal of this year, big picture, is does either one of these rookies, as rough as Shador was, and there's people that are walking all over him and whatnot, when he was good, those people were silent. So I'm not going to get into, we can go into that, but I don't go into all that of like burying Shador today. What is the goal, right? I think we all, disagree with me if you want, we all would agree, if the Browns find out one of their rookies actually has real upside and could be a franchise quarterback option, that is the biggest objective to this season, is it not?
Yeah. It would be the best thing if we found out that they were like great, for instance.
Or definitive, either way they're either trash or they're awesome.
Well, if they're trash, then that would confirm what our thoughts were on draft night, which is what the heck are they doing drafting Dylan Gabriel in the third round? Now, you can't say on this Tuesday afternoon, I mean, you can, but I think you would look foolish. You can't say, oh, great pick, bad pick, okay pick. It's too early. But I have come away from his two preseason performances more encouraged by Dylan Gabriel than I've been upset by Dylan Gabriel. I think Dylan Gabriel has done some very good things, some things that I actually did not even know if I would expect coming into things. The arm looks good. The ability to get rid of the ball looks pretty solid. Does that mean that he's prone from mistakes? No, it does not at all. You can't replace game reps. In those games, preseason games that are not against ones, I would say overall, Dylan Gabriel, if you're giving him worse than a B on his preseason, I think you're a hater. I think he's been solid, if not good, and encouraging for this football team, big picture. And we're going to see him. We're going to see him by probably week 6. If not sooner, we are going to see Dylan Gabriel lace it up for the Cleveland Browns. The Kenny Pickett trade last night more than confirmed that.
Okay, so you would buy into the idea that, and I think the Browns are betting on this with the trade of Kenny Pickett, that Dylan Gabriel's ready to see some prime NFL games.
Well, what's the point of playing Pickett in prime NFL games? Because if you're going to Pickett, it means this football team is bad, which a lot of us are saying that they're going to be trending in that direction. Why would I start Kenny Pickett valuable games and hold off the inevitable? Unless it was like a week 2 in Baltimore situation, I don't want to rush Dylan Gabriel out there. Mm-hmm. But I hope that Joe Flacco is standing upright still after week 1, and I think he will. And you guys know my thoughts, and I'm calling my shot again. I think the Browns are going to win week 1. I think Stefanski is going to deliver one of those performances that says, I'm tired of hearing it about how poor I am. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be great in week 8, but I'm saying I think that that's a motivated team. He's got that group fighting with a chip on their shoulder in week 1. They come out and they put together a performance against the Cincinnati franchise that has notoriously been bad in week 1 and 2 the last 4 or 5 years. I think that Gabriel can be made for the big moment, and why not? Why not try to find that out sooner rather than later? I don't want Dylan Gabriel's first start as a Cleveland Brown to come when it's snowing outside in mid-December. Like, I just don't. With the way that this season goes in all likelihood, to me, it would have made no sense to go Joe Flacco to then go Kenny Pickett for 4 or 5 games and then say, you know what, the Browns are now prepared to start Dylan Gabriel. I would have said, why didn't we just start Dylan Gabriel before then? And then I can find out. I can be willing to live with more mistakes. I got a little bit more time to find out if he's any good. And I can actually figure something out rather than delay the inevitable of starting Pickett. I know what your follow-up question could be, but that is my answer on this.
John Fanta on the fan hotline here with Nick and Jonathan. We obviously have talked a lot of Guardians with you as well. Have you given up on the Guardians in the wild card race after this latest abhorrent stretch?
I have given up. Yes. I'm throwing in the towel. The back-to-back losses to Arizona, primarily the series finale, a game that the Guardians really should have won, because you had an incredible start for a debut from Parker Messick, and you blew it. And then you follow that up, and I thought, well, you know, they're not completely dead yet. And you go to Texas, and I think if there was a definitive nail in the coffin, it was the ninth inning on Friday night, which, for those who didn't watch, the game ended. The bottom of the ninth inning on Friday night, a game in which the Guardians were ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth went about 3.5 minutes. It was literally three swings of the bat to give Texas the tie and then the win. And I thought to myself, that is it for this team. This has been a failure of a season. It's been a major disappointment for this organization. It is their worst season since 2012. You know, you'd have to go pre-Francona when you're talking about how rough this has been. And I think the vibes right now are as bad as they've been since Manny Acta was the manager of the Indians. I think for this Guardians team, like, the money that they did have, I didn't like the way that they spent it in the off season. And I think in the big picture, I don't put the blame on Stephen Vogt. There you go, Peterlin. Like, I'm not a Vogt hater. I think Stephen had a really incredible first season at the helm. I think that there's circumstances to the culture that Terry Francona built, and he took over, but he left his mark, and the guys clearly respect him. And an exchange with the player last night, that's people that are ticked off. I'd be more upset if there were no emotions. You know, Bybee doesn't have room to talk. He's been bad in recent weeks. The Guardians are paying him like he's their ace. He's not an ace, and he certainly isn't their ace. That's a big problem. But I think for this team and this organization, you know, when you're trying to thread a needle with the limited money you have, when you miss, it gets amplified. And when you couple that with, well, we need these farmhands to deliver. We need it's a lot of pressure to throw on people, throw on kids, frankly. I do question the hitting development, because now I'm seeing too much from a Gabriel Arias or, and I think Manzardo's had a good year from the home run column, no doubt. But when I look at this team and when I watch some of these guys, you know, Brian Rocchio had to be sent down at one point. John Kenzie Noel, that has not stuck at all. When I look at some of these guys that have come up through the farm, come up through the developmental system, it's pretty clear the Guardians have a hitting development problem. Because offensively, this team and this organization feels extremely limited right now.
John, great stuff, buddy. I really can't believe you went a JP like that. Ken Carmen, too. It was rough, but I support you. And I said, you know, you always go viral. We appreciate that. Be good, bud.
Three-win Wilson at it again.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. John Fanta on the fan hotline.
I like three-win Wilson,
though. You feel pretty foolish when they have three wins this season. We got more on the Gardos in the Bybee vote standoff. We got to get to the Guardians also put out their schedule, but we've got Kevin Stefanski's press conference coming up at 4:30. Reaction to the Browns and what John had to say about the Browns in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Kevin Stefanski, Browns head coach there, and as always, press conferences on The Fan are brought to you by Montrose Ford. Choose Click Cruise at MontroseFordAkron.com. We got to react to what he had to say. We also have some Guardians news here. Mac, you're just going to have to say it because I don't know what the hell you're saying.
No, we just have a quick traffic
update. Oh, yeah, we have a quick traffic update.
From the Kissling, Nestico, and Reddick Traffic Center, call 1-800-HURT-NOW.
An accident to 71 North at Cedar shows slowdowns from Harvard. Heavy congestion 77 South from Pershing to Brecksville Road. This is Joe Checkeye for 92.3 The Fan.
All right, guys. So before we get to any of the Kevin Stefanski stuff, pretty significant news. The Guardians have placed Carlos Santana on outright waivers. Obviously, with the season he's had, normally we wouldn't say this kind of move for the Guardians when we have some Brown stuff to talk about here. But given what Carlos has meant to this organization and to this town. To me, this feels like them waving the white flag. I know he's played less and less and less, but this feels like a, hey, we're falling out of this. Carlos, why don't you latch on to a contender? And so maybe you have a chance to finish off your career as a winner.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's helping him out. If he gets a chance to go ahead and be, I mean, he'd be a, he's not starting on a playoff team, but if he gets a chance to get onto a playoff team, not only the presence that he has as a veteran, but the idea that he still has a great glove at first base. And yeah, his hitting has not been good this year. But in clutch situations, you'd still have him up to, up at the plate and be fine with it.
I mean, there was like a about a 4-week stretch where Carlos really looked like, all right, we had the early season struggles. Now Carlos is coming alive.
Yeah.
And it just never did.
No.
And I think he's one of the guys that I think got hurt most in this lineup. Because I think in a good lineup, Carlos can still probably deliver you more power and more production than he has here. But I just think, like, I think this is a true case. If you're a fringe player, or if you're a good player but not a great player in a bad lineup, I think those are the guys that are hurt the most.
Yeah, but on the other side of it, I do like the idea that Kayfis and Manzardo are going to have the opportunities. Like, since the All-Star break, Santana started 21 out of 34 games. They've been slowly and assuredly just kind of removing him from the lineup more and more, and now this just kind of speeds that up. And it does. What I like about it is it seems like a classy move by the Guardians more than anything.
Yeah. Now, it'll be even classier if they play Kyle Manzardo every day of the week. But that's neither here nor there. Carlos Santana has been placed on outright waivers by the Cleveland Guardians. We'll have more on that, more on the Tanner Bibee Steven Vogt thing. But circling back to Kevin Stefanski's press conference, he was asked about who will start at running back. He said, we'll see. He was asked point blank, will Dylan Sampson be the starter week one? There was a we'll see. He also confirmed that they're going to have more than two running backs in the active roster.
Yeah, that part I thought was interesting for the maybe just not for the Audric Estime crowd, but the people that are convinced that that was interesting to me. I don't know if that means Amani Marshall. I don't know if that means Estime. I don't know what that means, but I think it's interesting.
I think the most interesting thing about that was the question, which is, what will you confirm for your fans that you'll have more than two running backs?
The phrasing of it for your fans?
Yeah, as if it's like a slap in the face of fans. They only have two running backs today. I thought that was a little bit mailing it in there, but that's all right. Some of the other
media is supposed to be the conduit for the fan, right? So maybe that's what they were getting after.
But no fans like, only got two running backs? No, but nobody's panicking about that today.
No.
There's been no outrage. It's been, they've only got two running backs.
There's been more outrage over the kicker situation than there has been anything with running backs.
A lot of kicking questions in this one.
A lot of kicking questions.
We got the importance of the entirety of the work of Andre Schmidt versus Dustin Hopkins. I also think it was interesting they're working through. I would be a little surprised if we don't have a practice squad kicker just here to swap out.
Well, so that is one part of this that I just find interesting, that they just straight up released him, only because, we had that big discussion yesterday about what do you do with Hopkins and how does this all work? And like, you're paying him. You could have kept him on the roster. It's not like it wouldn't have been like the end of the world to just keep him there. And then if Schmidt just flat out stinks, well, all right, then you give Hopkins a chance and maybe he reclaims the job.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about this is I am a little concerned that in light of trying to make sure we don't have to go through Dustin Hopkins just stinking for 18 weeks, I have a feeling this year is going to be a kicker carousel, which is way worse than just one kicker stinking. Like when you're on we joke about four quarterbacks all the time. When you're on your fourth quarter, when you're on your fourth kicker by end of November, chances are there have been a lot of missed kicks. I think this is as dangerous of a path than just giving Dustin Hopkins the opportunity to stink it up this season.
I mean, this is not the path that if you're a 10 or 11 win team, you go down.
Yeah, that's fair. You go with the veteran.
You go with the veteran.
Yeah.
Like you're like, all right, even if it's been struggles with the Pats, you make sure that you have somebody that has kicked in the league for X amount of years. You just don't roll the dice with a rookie. And so that's kind of a fun part about this year, is they're going to have opportunities to do that. If it blows up in their face, then it just gets us one step closer to the number one overall pick anyway.
Now, another thing that Kevin actually did say today, Dylan will be the backup. I don't know that's a surprise to anyone, but I think it is important that he actually said something that actually is confirmed by Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah. It's not a surprise to anybody, but it was probably the biggest takeaway from the whole entire press conference, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it's the thing that people care about the most. And obviously the idea that then Shador will be the third quarterback, and he'll dress as an emergency quarterback on game days.
So can I just specific to this, I think the idea of the whole body of work matters. I think that probably proves that's probably why Andre Schmidt is the kicker right now. And similarly, like, I think that's why Dylan is the backup over Kenny Pickett. Not that Dylan, like, blew everybody out of the water, but it's apparent that they were giving him opportunities to fail and learn in camp, which is a huge sign that they trust the quarterback. I like the message it sends that Dylan, who's been there all but 1 week, was able to grab the backup quarterback job, as opposed to a guy who, through no fault of his own, had four practices and busted his hamstring, and then we never really saw anything from him.
No, Dylan makes more sense. It just does. For this team and for this situation, Dylan makes more sense than Kenny Pickett.
But I think for this team, guys, and like, if you look at the roster, and this is just something that I think is actually tangible that we can pull away from this. Gage Larvadin. Taking a roster spot over Deontay Johnson. That is a guy that earned a roster spot. Andre Schmidt over Dustin Hopkins. That's a guy that earned a roster spot over a $5 million dead cap haircut. Dylan Gabriel earning the backup spot, which facilitated then the trade for Kenny Pickett, who they had $5 million and potentially, a fifth round pick and potentially, I think it was like $10 or $15 million invested in Kenny Pickett. Like, That to me, like, okay, one thing that I wanted to see is, are you going to run a camp where guys can earn their way into things? Doesn't feel that way for everybody. For several players, though, it does feel like they were given a chance to make this roster, and they did. I think that helps you early in the season.
It's a little bit of a mixed bag, right? Because, like, on one side of that, and I 100% see what you're saying, and on one side, it's like, that's great. They gave these guys an opportunity, and they're doing that the right way. And on the other side of that, you're like, well, Cedric Tillman is still making rosters. You know, so it's kind of like in one end, I see where there's competitive battles and people are being rewarded for that. And on the other side, you just see like guys like Zach Zinner. It's like, all right, I guess we're just going to really see what we have with some of these projects, and we're going to really run that out.
I would imagine that there are, I bet you there's like circles of like each maybe Kevin has guys that are protected in his head and maybe Andrew has guys that are protected in his head, and the guys who get lopped off are the guys who are in that concentric circle of, I could take him or leave
him. Take him or leave him.
Like, nobody's going to die on the hill of that. But like,
is that where Deontay Johnson lives? In that circle of, I don't want to go to bat for him at this point.
I mean,
it's
the
okay.
fact that it was a 1 year vetmin deal was like, and I don't think any of it was guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that tells you that nobody's really going to go hard in the paint for Deontay
Meanwhile,
Johnson.
Meanwhile, Barry's like, hey, Cedric Tillman, that's my guy. I need to make sure that guy's still, I drafted him. I need to make sure he's still on the roster. We're going to see this thing through.
I'm still hoping for Cedric. It'd just be nice.
We had Tyvus on Friday while you were out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went through all the wide receivers, and I named like 10 of them or something. And then he's like answering it. And I'm like, oh, and I forgot Cedric Tillman. And Tyvus is like, yeah, did you though? It was the most cruel thing I've ever heard to Cedric Tillman.
216-474-0092. Dylan Gabriel will be the backup, as heard by Kevin Stefanski there. Not a surprise, but definitely a confirmation. And did the Browns make the right decision with the kicker conversation? But we'll get to the wide receiver conversation in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I thought it had been cut, but apparently hadn't been cut.
Wait, he's not on the team, right?
No, he is. Yeah, he's one of the six wide receivers.
Oh, look at that. He did make the team.
Yeah.
Good, because when I saw that report initially, I'm like, well, who's returning kicks?
Yeah. I actually think he should be cut for a running back, but we'll see. They'll probably end up being Gage, I would assume.
Where was the confusion there? How did he end up getting
somebody
cut?
Somebody tweeted out that he had been cut, and it was an actual reporter, and I think I took the bait, or maybe I got Uncle Chapsed. That has happened occasionally.
I thought it was Pelissero that had it yesterday initially, and then like an hour or two later, Mary Kay had tweeted out a refute to that report.
Mm.
I've been redlining people that have been getting cut all along the way. I had DeAndre Carter in the red line and didn't even... Well, good thing you said something, because they're going to be like, so who's going to return kicks here, Nick? What's the deal with that? Hey, can we trust Isaiah Bond? I don't know.
But not to be too much too conspiratorial.
Yeah.
Deontay went from number two reps, like getting significant first team reps as the number two wide receiver, to being cut inside 2 weeks. That is a huge, even though they didn't owe him any money, That's a pretty significant change, and I just have to feel like this wasn't just all about the football.
Yeah, it's interesting. He dominated. There was like a 4 or 5 day stretch where he legitimately dominated, yep. And it's funny because it was actually one of the couple days that we were out there, we saw him look really good, and maybe if one of the big lessons that we have coming out of this is there's a lot of people that end up looking really good and really bad in camp, and we just can't make that much out of it. If that's what it ends up being, it's what it ends up being, but he was really in the driver's seat. He was impressing a lot of people, making a lot of plays, and for him to fall off the way he did, it's pretty startling.
So I kind of felt about Diontae Johnson the way I felt about Dustin Hopkins, of which I can't really pound the table for a player who, in the case of Dustin Hopkins, played awfully last year and cost you some games that prematurely ended your season.
Mm-hmm.
With Diontae, I didn't really want to sign him in the first place because of the off-the-field stuff. That being said, he was here. He played well. So it's weird for me because on one hand, I'm like, I felt with both those players, I was comfortable going into the season and let's see what happens. The Browns did not. I think it's interesting the guys that ended up getting the roster spot. I would have let Diontae Johnson at least start the season and see where it goes from there, just because the other wide receiver room really is just not inspiring. I think we're a little too close to this, like Browns fans, a little too close to see how really depressing that room is until somebody steps up and makes a play.
Well, think about it. We make someone like Jamari Thrash into a way bigger deal than he actually is. That's just the reality of it. Like,
I mean, same thing with Cedric Tillman that you pointed out in the last segment.
And same thing even with like Gage Warvenden, you know? Like, I mean, there's like, we make these guys into a way bigger deal than they really are. Like, Jerry Jeudy is the only person on this team right now that has a real case across the NFL that if something happened and the Browns needed to get rid of him, he'd have the value. It's really about it.
Well, so I wonder if having Joe as your starter at the beginning of the season maybe made you more confident with a less proven wide receiver room. Because I think the one thing that Joe has shown, he made David Njoku 2 years ago. He made Amari Cooper look like
Njoku never looked better with him. Yeah, and Amari had that the 250-yard game against the Texans in week 17, 16, somewhere around there.
I mean, David Bell had a moment or two. Elijah Moore had his best games as a Brown with Joe Flacco. So there is a part of me that, I would have kept Diontae. Didn't want him in the first place, but I would have kept him just to see if he could, give you something at the start of the season. But there is a part of me that's like, wonders, all right, it doesn't really matter with Joe because he's such a pro. As long as these guys are getting open, which is what the offense is about, right? On schedule throws.
Yeah.
Joe's going to give them a chance to build something no matter what the names on the back of the jersey are.
It does get you a little excited about Joe Flacco because you do have that belief. And I think if there's anything from a couple years ago that'll stay with me is how much better he made some of those players that you just discussed, how much better he made them game in, game out. Like, I started to have a belief in all sorts of guys that up until that point, it was just kind of hit or miss.
I think the only problem is the obvious, which is, what if he gets benched early in the season? Because Dylan Gabriel's not, I think Dylan and Joe are going to have to play similarly in this offense, but Dylan doesn't have the upside of Joe. Meaning, like, I'm talking about on the arm upside.
Yeah.
So the throws down the field that Joe would make that got you those big plays, until Dylan proves he can consistently throw down the field, there's going to be a lot of attention paid and just keeping the wide receivers in front of him.
No, you're putting, whether it's Dylan or whether it's Shador, any one of these quarterbacks, you're putting them behind the eight ball. Like, you're not giving them a great opportunity when it comes to in the situation to thrive. And think about it. Even in the third preseason game, you had the injury pop up to Posick, and everyone's like, oh, but this year is going to be different with that offensive line. Imagine by the time Dylan gets in, you're going to have two or three guys in that offensive line that are probably banged up or injured in some way or another. You'll have all sorts of wide receiver issues the way that we're talking about. We don't even know if Judkins is going to be on the field. Like, it's not an ideal setup.
216-474-0092. How much trust do you have in the wideout room as the Browns did move on from Diontae Johnson? It's weird because, again, I did not necessarily think Diontae was the right call when they signed him, but I saw enough, at least early in camp, that I just kind of assumed he was going to be on the roster. And now you look at this and it's like this putting a lot of the onus on Joe Flacco, who is 40 and who might be down to his last few starts with if this thing really doesn't go well. I think you feel better with Joe than you do with Dylan with this wide receiver room. But if Dylan's on the other side of this 6 games in, 7 games in, you're really not giving a rookie quarterback much to work with.
No, you're really not. You really aren't. But listen, they gave Diontae Johnson enough of a chance, though. They really did. Not only in the preseason games that we saw with the drops he had, in particular in the Carolina game, We had Ashley on, and she talked about the joint practices, and that's not something we were able to see, but Ashley was able to be there. Apparently, he just was awful against the Eagles in that little stretch, and you know they care about these joint practices.
All right, now we really got to get to the heart of the matter right now. And again, yep. If you guys want to get in on this, how much do you trust? How much trust do you have in the wideout room? Charlotte Hornets number one hater, a.k.a. Johnny Boy _ number two on Twitter.
He's the Hornets number one hater?
I think he might be. Oh, well, remember, Cavs-Hornets rivalry.
Oh, yeah, that's a big thing.
And so Johnny Boy number two, not
Johnny
Boy number
one. Is this just a listener that came from Carolina and now listens here to us?
No, Johnny Boy is a Cleveland fan.
He's a Cleveland fan.
I think this ties back to the rivalry week thing.
Okay.
I think
he's taking the joke.
Yeah.
Longer than he needs to.
But he sent this to @afternoon 923 FAN. Will no one correct Nick Wilson? @NickWilson says on how he says the word roster. It's not a roster. Do I say roster weird?
No, listen, I don't think so at all. Mac, I think, is it fair to say we're very quick to point out when you say something just a little off? The same way you guys are very quick to point out when I say something just a little
correct.
Off? So
thoughts
I would not be.
And prayers.
I would not be shy.
Thoughts and prayers, yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so we would not be shy in this instance to tell you if you said roster wrong.
Roster.
Roster.
I didn't know there was a way to mispronounce, rather.
Well, how
roster.
Does he say you're saying it?
He's saying roster.
Like, how is he spelling it?
R-A-W-S-T-E-R.
Oh, I thought he was going to do the R-A-H, like the Pat McAfee.
Yeah, like roster. Roster or roster. I've heard it both ways.
I'm saying
like there's
roster.
Almost like a Boston accent that he wants to give you in there.
Yeah.
McAfee calls it the Pittsburgh accent, but it's almost like a Boston accent that he wants to throw in there.
Roster. Are we hearing this clear?
Roster.
Roster.
We got nowhere. So not only is this guy taking his Twitter handles too long, he's also derailing our show.
Well, if he was Johnny Boy number one, he wouldn't be doing this. I think we all agree on that.
Johnny Boy number three would never.
Wouldn't have the gumption to do that. 216-474-0092. Are the Browns set at wide receiver despite cutting Deontay Johnson? I do think it's going to be interesting how they get the extra back. There's a part of me that thinks it's going to be Quinshon Judkins. It's just once roster settled down, they might finally come to a deal there. I think it's going to be one of the four tight ends. But considering the roster makeup, it wouldn't surprise me if it's whoever they consider to be the sixth wide receiver, whether that's Carter or Gage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the entire time, I thought they were going to take five wide receivers. I didn't think they were going to take six. And then here we are with six.
216-474-0092. How much do you trust or how much trust do you have in the wide receiver room? The lead in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.